This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. After 2 months of investigating, the House Intelligence Committee has released a sweeping impeachment report. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magad.
The 300-page report accuses President Trump of misusing the power of his office through wrongdoing toward Ukraine, saying he put his own personal political interest above the national interest, jeopardizing the election process and national security. It also argues he then obstructed Congress's investigation. The findings will serve as the foundation for a debate on removing the president from office. In London for a NATO summit, he's again calling the entire process a hoax. The White House says it was a one-sided sham process and that the report reads like the ramblings of a basement blogger trying to prove something when there is no evidence. Sagar Magani, Washington.
And Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell reacted to the news by saying if the House votes for an impeachment trial, the Senate will comply.
Yeah, I don't have any advice to give the president about the way they want to handle the representation. Of his positions. It's all in the House at the moment. And as I've said over and over again, if the House does in fact act, then the Senate will be in business with an impeachment trial.
A Democratic presidential candidate, Kamala Harris, the daughter of an Indian and Jamaican immigrants, has dropped out of the presidential race because of lack of funding. She had one of the most memorable lines in the first debate among Democratic candidates in June.
And, you know, there was a little girl in California who was part of the second class to integrate her public schools. And she was bused to school every day. And that little girl was me.
Harris has been the only person of color to qualify thus far for the next Democratic presidential debate, December 19th. Harris stressed the end of her White House bid will not be the end of her political activism. This is VOA News. Vanishing sea ice, devastating heat waves, and encroaching sea levels. A new report from the UN's World Meteorological Organization on Tuesday warned of dire consequences. As it said, the current decade is the hottest since records began more than 150 years ago. Reuters' David Doyle.
That's the assessment of the World Meteorological Organization on Tuesday in a report that paints a bleak picture of vanishing sea ice, devastating heat waves, and encroaching sea levels. It says average temperatures for the 5-year and 10-year periods ending in 2019 are almost certain to be the hottest on record, and 2019 is on course to be the second or third warmest year. Experts warn that climate change has been a key driver of a recent rise in global hunger, following a decade of steady declines, with more than 820 million people without enough food in 2018. And the WMO report also emphasized that weather disasters have displaced millions of people this year.
That's Reuters' David Doyle reporting. As health officials scrutinize marijuana vaping, it's increasingly on law enforcement's radar, too. AP correspondent Matt Small.
As health officials scrutinize marijuana vaping, it's increasingly on law enforcement's radar, too. Nationwide, authorities have seized more than 500,000 marijuana vape cartridges and arrested more than 120 people in the past 2 years, according to figures compiled by the Associated Press. In New York City alone, drug authorities say they've confiscated about 200,000 illegal cartridges since last summer. The special agent in charge of the Drug Enforcement Administration's office there says the government has been beefing up efforts to crack down on groups trafficking in illegal marijuana vaping products. I'm Matt Small.
An actress' claim of racism behind the scenes of a popular TV show will be getting a closer look. AP Entertainment editor Oscar Wells Gabriel has that story.
After word got out that Gabrielle Union had been fired from America's Got Talent, the actress has been complaining that she was treated unfairly. She says there were racist jokes and comments made when cameras were not rolling, and Union says she was fired because she raised objections to NBC and to the production firm that did the show. Now the network and the union that represents on-air talent say they will investigate the complaints. The union statement says such investigations and their results are usually kept private unless the member who made the complaint wants them to be released. I'm Oscar Wells Gabriel.
A spokeswoman for former President Jimmy Carter says that he is already feeling better after the latest of multiple visits to the hospital this year alone. Carter Center spokeswoman said that Monday the 95-year-old was admitted to a hospital over the weekend for an infection. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News. We'll be right back.
Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Wednesday, December 4th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The East African Court of Justice rules on the legality of a 2015 Burundi president's decision to seek another term.
The Constitutional Court clearly applied its mind to the background of the Constitution's promulgation and drew its conclusions on that basis. We find no plausible reason to fault that judicial reasoning or result.
That was Judge Monica Mugenyi of the East African Court of Justice. A Ugandan bishop has a prescription for the country's fight against corruption. Malawi's government says it is not to blame for the recall of the European Union ambassador to Malawi. Flaws wreak havoc throughout Kenya. And is it really true that the late President Robert Mugabe left behind just $10 million?
It is shocking because he had been in power for so many years. What is perhaps left to be answered is whether or not this disclosure is also honest enough to include whatever monies he may have banked outside the country.
Nkululeko Sibanda is the spokesperson for Zimbabwe opposition leader Nelson Chamisa. And what caused the fire that destroyed Gambia's fisheries industry? Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The East African Court of Justice has dismissed the case filed against the Burundian government by the East African Civil Society Organization and the Pan-African Lawyers Union about President Pierre Nkurunziza's 2015 decision to seek another term. The court acknowledged the Arusha Agreement and said Burundi's Constitutional Court decision on the matter was intended to stabilize the country. Moses Javier Rimana reports from Arusha, Tanzania.
The East African Court of Justice Judge Monica Mugenyi explained Article 96 of Burundi's 2005 Constitution as it relates to presidential terms.
Article 96 means that the number of terms by direct universal suffrage is limited to two only, and that Article 302 creates a special mandate by indirect universal suffrage, which has nothing in common with the terms of office under Article 96. The court did also observe that the foregoing interpretation reflects a compromise position that was intended to stabilize the political situation that did prevail in Burundi at the time.
According to Article 96 of the 2005 Burundi Constitution, the President of the Republic is elected by direct universal suffrage for a term of 5 years, renewable once. The East African Court of Justice Judge Monica Mugenyi said Burundi's Constitutional Court ruled in accordance to the country's 2005 Constitution and the 2000 Arusha Agreement that brought back peace in Burundi.
The Constitutional Court clearly applied its mind to the background of the Constitution's promulgation, duly acknowledged and tested the Arusha Accord against related foundational laws, such as that country's electoral code. It took due cognizance of the political situation that prevailed in Burundi at the time in its determination of what emphasis to place on the Arusha Accord and drew its conclusions on that basis. We find no plausible reason to fault that judicial reasoning or result.
President Pierre Nkurunziza came to power in 2005 after through a parliamentary vote. His supporters argued that that does not count as a first term because the 2005 Constitution says that the president of the country is elected directly by the people. The East African Civil Society Organization, Pan-African Lawyers Union, and some opposition members argued that President Pierre Nkurunziza had served 2 5-year terms by 2015 and therefore was not eligible to run for another term, which they believe violated the Constitution's two-term limit. Nelson Ndeki is a lawyer from the Pan-African Lawyers Union.
I'm thinking of the consequences which the judgment of the Constitutional Court of Burundi meant. I was expecting a different judgment, but unfortunately the court has decided what it decided. We don't know. Maybe we might appeal. Maybe we might not. So we'll see how it goes.
Burundian officials were not immediately available to comment on the court's ruling. Burundi amended the 2005 constitution in last year's referendum, scrapping term limits and making it possible for President Nkurunziza to serve another term. Following the referendum, President Nkurunziza announced that he would not run in the next year's presidential elections. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Arusha, Tanzania.
A prominent Ugandan anti-corruption activist says the best way for President Yoweri Museveni to fight corruption is to file all public officials alleged to be involved in financial malfeasance. Bishop Dr. Zach Nirinji of the Church of Uganda says the upcoming anti-corruption walk is unlikely to help in the fight against endemic corruption in Uganda. His remarks come as President Museveni plans to lead an anti-corruption walk today, Wednesday, in the capital, Kampala, labeled "A Corruption-Free Uganda Starts With Me." Opposition and civil society groups blame President Museveni for what they say is the endemic corruption in public institutions. But supporters say the walk is a strong demonstration that the president is committed to weed out graft. VOA's Peter Clote spoke with Bishop Dr. Zach Nirinji.
The question one has to ask is why now? And clearly, this is an intentional political move. Clearly, he has come to the conclusion that corruption is one of the biggest threats against his continuing to hold on to power. Is one of the biggest threats, in my view. Secondly, I think he realizes that he needs to find a way of recapturing the ground because he has really lost the ground of the popularity. It's diminished, especially in the wake of a very strong youth-led people power movement. It has really nothing to do with corruption, in my view, in the sense of really addressing the corruption problem.
But Bishop, some Ugandans are saying, particularly the Inspectorate of Government, has described the Wednesday's walk as an indication of a high level of commitment and visibility by the president in the fight against corruption. Why do you disagree?
Well, the question is, how does the president show the highest level of political will? It's not by walking. So is the president protesting? What's the president doing? What's the campaign the president is launching here? The president has, consistently failed, A, to deal with the known political leaders. He could sack them, he could deal with them. There are, in fact, quite a number of political leaders who have previously been interdicted because of corruption, and he has reinstated them in powerful political positions. When a president goes across the country with sacks of money, literally bribing people, paying money, that shows to you that this is corruption. That is the face of corruption in this country.
Supporters of the president are saying he has instituted bodies like the Inspectorate of Government and the State House Anti-Corruption Unit, which has basically unearthed acts of corruption across government institutions, and those corporates have been punished. Don't you give the government or perhaps President Museveni some credit?
There is absolutely no question that General Museveni's government has put in place adequate laws and institutions that could address the corruption problem in this country. But I can also say to you, so how come these are institutions that are a decade plus old, but there is no impact? On the contrary, corruption has kept growing and growing and growing. And it's because corruption is the method, is a primary way in which General Museveni and the NRM keep power. I can say this to you. Remove corruption out of this government and it will collapse.
That was Bishop Dr. Zach Nirinji of the Church of Uganda. He spoke with VOA's Peter Clote from the capital, Kampala. Today is Wednesday, December 4th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time, 14 minutes past the hour. A spokesman for Zimbabwe opposition leader Nelson Chamisa says Zimbabweans have every right to know exactly how much was the late President Robert Mugabe worth. Nkululeko Sibanda says knowing would perhaps help to explain the country's current economic situation, characterized by rising hyperinflation, foreign and domestic currency shortages, and food insecurity. This after Zimbabwe's state-run newspaper reported that the late President Mugabe left behind just $10 million in the bank, some small plots of land, and a handful of modest properties. Mugabe ruled Zimbabwe for nearly 37 years before he was overthrown in 2017 by the military. Sibanda says Zimbabweans want to know whether the disclosure includes money and properties that the late president had outside Zimbabwe.
It is shocking because he had been in power for so many years, and during that time, people around him were able to amass an untold amount of wealth through corruption and other similar activities. What is perhaps left to be answered is whether or not this disclosure is also honest enough to include whatever monies he may have banked outside the country. It is very difficult to imagine that he didn't have a bank account elsewhere, but he sort of sold the idea that he was a Pan-African, so it's hard to tell.
So how true is it that it has been suggested that perhaps underneath this issue of the late president's wealth could be some friction between the ruling ZANU-PF and the family, or perhaps due to family friction itself? What do you think is happening?
Well, it could be that basically if he had a lot of wealth, they're not going to be willing to disclose that, because then it would mean that people would be outraged and would demand that that wealth be explained. So it could be that there's a sort of undisclosed wealth in this case, but it could be that while his lieutenants were busy plundering the country, he was not involved. I think that the fights between himself or between ZANU-PF and his family really are unable to explain the paltry sum that seems to be included in his estate.
As you said, former President Mugabe served the country for nearly almost 39 years. So do you think the people of Zimbabwe should have a say in trying to at least to find out exactly how much their president, who served them for so many years, how much was he worth?
It is an important subject for Zimbabweans, that they should be, because that may help them explain the problems they're facing economically in this country, and why this country never got to improve or grow its economy, turning point in the last 30 to 39 to 40 years. So that's a pertinent question that Zimbabweans can legitimately raise, and that those were the answers must provide in order to explain some of Zimbabwe's current conditions.
What's the role of Grace Mugabe? What is she saying here?
Well, I don't think she's saying much. She's, you know, one that's going to be the main beneficiary of this estate, but her role is quite central. She's a powerful lady who will fight her own. If there's anybody who's going to take her on this one, you can rest assured that she's some kind of terrier. She will go for it, and she really doesn't give in easily.
Thank you very much again, sir. We're happy to speak with you.
Thank you very much for having me.
Nkululeko Sibanda is the spokesperson for Zimbabwe opposition leader Nelson Chamisa. He spoke with us from the capital, Harare. Malawi's government says it is not to blame for the recall of the European Union ambassador to Malawi. Local media reported earlier this week that Ambassador Passen had been given a week to return to the EU head office in Belgium's capital, Brussels. Critics accused the government of being behind the recall after sending a petition to Brussels complaining that Ambassador Passen participated in a demonstration demanding an independent investigation into allegations that Malawian police officers raped women. Information Minister Mark Botumani tells viewers Peter Clotty that all accredited envoys are required to be non-partisan and to respect the rules governing diplomacy.
Well, it is not correct that the government of Malawi has been the removal of the ambassador from Malawi. What is correct is that at least the information that we have, although we have not been communicated officially as government, is that the Brussels, that is the headquarters of the EU, has recalled their ambassador from Malawi for the reasons that we have not been informed. But yes, on that basis, we can confirm that we have received those reports that the EU ambassador has indeed been recalled from Malawi.
But there are concerns that her recall was engineered by the Malawian government after writing a petition to the headquarters of the EU embassy in Brussels expressing concern about some of her activities in Malawi. How do you respond to that?
Now, we cannot confirm that. As I said, that we have not received communication from the EU informing us about the inquiry report. But for those allegations, we cannot confirm that. We cannot justify that. All we know is that we are in good relationship with the EU, and that is why they recognize their mission here in Malawi. But for this purpose, we know that it is them that have to report their ambassador.
Some people said her expulsion is regrettable in Malawi because the government appears displeased with her demand for an independent investigation into allegation that some police officers raped or violently attacked some women. And because of that, the government seemed to be displeased with that, moving against her. How do you respond to that?
Well, I don't think government could do that. Everyone is free to exercise their opinion on anything. Although what we always say is that whenever, ambassadors or high commissioners are in a country like Malawi, they are supposed to be apolitical and base their opinions, they base their assertions on evidence. But on this specific issue, I cannot confirm that she didn't know because she participated in that in the demonstrations that occurred based on those allegations against the Malawi police service.
Some Malawians are saying that her treatment, so to speak, was unfair because in calling for the shedding of light on the violence against women, this was similarly called for by the British ambassador. How do you respond to such critics, and do you think their criticism is legitimate?
No, Peter, I would like to state it again that we do not know the reason why the EU ambassador is being recalled from Malawi. As for the connection with the issues to do with the Sunre and other things, I cannot confirm that. We have expressed our concerns, but we expressed them in other ways, in other forums. But I cannot confirm the connection of that with the recording of the EU ambassador from Malawi.
Mark Botomani is Malawi's information minister. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the capital, Lilongwe. At least 132 people have died in Kenya following flash floods in many parts of the country. The Kenyan government says more than 300,000 people nationwide have been affected by floods as heavy rains continue to pound. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, the government says it has put in place measures to ensure that affected people will get relief.
Speaking in Nairobi, Kenya, during a press conference, government spokesperson Cyrus Oguna said that at least 132 people have died, 330,000 affected, 17,000 displaced, and 11,000 livestock swept away. Oguna says the roads that were cut off will be reconstructed to resume transport operations that has been paralyzed in most parts of the country.
Kenha is on the ground, working around the clock, open access, so that activities and daily movement can be able to take place. Agriculture is equally affected, farmlands and crops have been destroyed, and livestock swept away. And many houses have been swept away or destroyed. Of course, you do recall the disaster in West Pokot where several households lost their property, but not just in West Pokot alone, but other regions, albeit not so many counties that have experienced it.
The Kenyan government will continue monitoring the situation and undertake appropriate intervention mechanism. Devolution Cabinet Secretary Jane Wamalwa said that the government has put measures in place to curb the situation.
We are putting the interventions in place to bring relief to the affected, whether by drought or floods, because the experts are telling us this is the terrible new normal. Long time ago, drought would come in a cycle of 10 years. The frequency increased to 5 years.
On the other hand, Treasury Cabinet Secretary Ukur Yatani has said that the relief food has been purchased by the government as other funds are set aside in aid of the affected persons.
Sometimes you send money, the beneficiary does not know how to read and write, cannot even realize that he has received this money. But then the phone, he gets access. The siblings, maybe the grandchildren, their own children, the other caretakers, get access to this. And we have seen cases where that fund can be diverted to go to other unintended beneficiaries.
According to the Meteorological Department of Kenya, the rains are predicted to continue till late December. Mr. Oguna says Appropriate measures will be taken, as he asked Kenyans who live in high-risk areas to relocate to safer areas.
So what lies ahead is that these trends are unlikely to subside before the end of December. And therefore, as government, we'll continue to monitor the situation and undertake appropriate intervention mechanisms. We're therefore issuing an advisory that those living in high-risk areas, and I'll mention them, such as Lake Victoria Basin, Lower Tana Delta, coastal and central regions, to move to safer areas. Already the government has designated camps in all counties that are affected where people can move to.
Already the Kenyan government has distributed food aid to 32 affected counties in the country, as West Pokot leads in flood tragedy, having claimed at least 50 lives in the past 9 days. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
A major fire got at Gambia's fisheries ministry on Monday this week, completely destroying office appliances, computers and files. As Panderi Umbai reports, investigations are underway to establish the cause.
James Gomez is Gambia's fisheries minister. He was in his office when the fire engulfed the old colonial building.
It's an accident because I was sitting in the office when I saw flames, and I cried out and people came. We all ran out of the building because it was not a controllable fire, so that's what happened.
The blaze, which started at 11 a.m. Gambian time, had destroyed computers, government files and other valuables. The cause of the fire is unknown.
Well, they are still investigating. We have been there today with the arms of government that are investigating. Initially, they are looking at possible power short circuit, but we are not too sure.
Personnel of Gambia's fire and ambulance services were dispatched on site to help put out the fire. Efforts to stop the fire was virtually impossible, as the building was completely ravaged. Fisheries Minister Gomez has dismissed reports that the building was allegedly burned down by workers.
But why should we burn down our building? For any reason, we have working in that ministry very honest and dedicated Gambians. And this is not an era that you can burn a building to hide anything anyway. If there was anything to hide, our ministry is the most transparent ministry in the country.
Gomez says his ministry is among one of the most productive ministries in the country. He said some illegal fishing trawlers were recently apprehended and fined by the state. The ship owners were fined 10 million Gambian dollars for illegal fishing.
I don't stand for corruption. I am clean, and I will not head an institution that is corrupted. That is why I made it transparent that if anybody applies, in 5 days you should know whether you've got a license or not.
Retired Army Captain Ibu Jalo is the former commander of Gambia's Navy.
That ministry going in flames really is going to put a lot of, that surveillance program in jeopardy, because we don't know what records are going to get, will be set or will be destroyed. We have no idea of what was going on that triggered the fire in the ministries.
Jalo says maritime corruption is common in the Gambia.
I can remember back in the 90s, I was the head of the Gambian Navy. And I know there was a lot of corruption, at all levels. The licensing, from the licensing stage to the surveillance program, and eventually, subsequently, also in the prosecution of illegal fishing activities. So, a lot of money is involved.
Jalo has called on the government to investigate the incident and bring the perpetrators the book. For VOA Daybreak Africa, this is Panderi by reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Briefly, before we leave you a summary of Africa news, Zimbabwe's former president, Robert Mugabe, left behind $10 million, 10 cars, a farm, and several homes, but apparently no will. His estate revealed on Tuesday. The state-run Herald newspaper reported on Tuesday that Mugabe's daughter, Bona, registered the estate with the High Court on behalf of the family. And the East African Court of Justice has dismissed the case filed against the Burundian government by the East African Civil Society Organization and the Pan-African Lawyers Union about President Pierre Nkurunziza's 2015 decision to seek another term. That's it for this Wednesday, December 4th edition of Daybreak Africa. I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you a very good day.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
on the next Straight Talk Africa. The International Day for the Disabled Persons is commemorated on December 3rd. Disability on the continent on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
On December 5th, Border Crossings will bring you the greatest songs inspired by the soul genre. You'll hear smash hits from Three Dog Night, Holland Oates, and George Michael. If you like these tracks, you'll love our Soul Inspirations theme. December 5th on The Voice of America.